Hello there, podcast land. This episode of the Behind the Barricade podcast is sponsored by Podcast Texts. Podcasters, do you want to expand your podcast reach to 360 million, maybe even more people? Do you want to make your podcast searchable on Google, Yahoo, even Ask Jeeves? Then look no further than Podcast Texts. You can increase your podcast reach exponentially. You can also reach the deaf and hearing impaired. They can read your podcast. It's unbelievable the amount of ways Podcast Text can help you. Maybe you have a few links you'd like to include. Not a problem. You can include them thanks to Podcast Texts. Seem too good to be true? Visit PodcastTexts.com to create a more dynamic user experience for your audience today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast, and here are your hosts, John O'Connor and Daniel Tao.
Hello and welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast. My name is John O'Connor. Like always, I'm with Daniel Tao, and we have reached number 56 of this thing we call a podcast. Today, we talk with the bassist of Woven War, Mr. Josh Gilbert. We talk to him about his new album coming out called Honor is Dead. It's out October 21st on Metal Blade Records. We talk to him about his old band, As I Lay Dying, and we also hype up the Fury Tour featuring Battlecross, Soilwork, Unearth, and Darkness Divided, along with Woven War, starting on October 14th. Let's get right into things. Here it is, episode 56, Josh Gilbert of Woven War. Here we Jersey.
Nice.
Yeah, so we're actually having a decent season too. I mean, minus the whole Cal situation, but
yeah, I've seen, like, I haven't had a ton of time to get on or, like, you know, updated with all the stats and all the new players and stuff yet this year. I've been super busy moving. I just moved into a house, so I've been, like, just busy trying to transfer my studio and everything.
Oh, nice, man. Congrats.
Thanks, yeah.
First house or
Yeah. We were just I got married about 3 years ago, and we were living out in California, and we just sort of bounced around out there and then had a loft and stuff. But then about a year ago, moved here. So, just excited to be in a house, because I did have an apartment and a studio separate. So now they're all in one, which is way better for me.
Man, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. So
what kind of studio you got?
It's a recording studio. I do a lot of just rock and metal stuff, but lately I've been doing this voiceover thing for, like, a medical company, which is probably the most boring thing I've ever done, but it's definitely, you know, it's nice to just show up and be done at the end of it and not have a ton of editing and, you know, all kinds of recording type stuff to do.
So when you're not in the studio with the band and you're not touring, you do music for stuff like that, for, like, a side, you know, job or whatever?
Yeah. Huh.
That's quite interesting. I, again, wouldn't have pictured that.
it's so funny. I'm watching that show, Shameless, and the chick's dating a musician, obviously. I don't know. He, like, tours in, like, local areas, but that's what he does. He writes music for, like, you know,
like jingles like Uncle Jesse
shows,
did.
It's like, yeah, you would not want to fucking listen to this because it's for like a little kid's TV show. It makes you want to kill yourself, you know?
It was like Charlie.
Well, luckily, I haven't had to do that yet.
Hey, but if the money's right, you're going to fucking do it. Why not?
Oh, yeah, yeah. If the price is right, I'll do, you know, write pretty much any kind of music you want.
You want me to play Lady Gaga? Sure, I'll do it. Yeah. Just pay me.
Just like Goodfellas. Yeah, you want something done? Fuck you, pay me. But yeah, man. Yeah. So you actually have a new single out called Censorship, right?
Right.
Nice. And it's actually very, very hard. Like harder than your previous album, what I got out of it. So is the rest of the album coming up on October 21st, I think?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, the record in general came out a little bit heavier because for, I mean, a variety of reasons. You know, we started the first record and I kind of explained to everyone that it kind of, there was this optimistic vibe about everything because I think we were kind of, you know, it was a new beginning. We were trying to distract ourselves from the sort of like really disappointing reality at the time that, mm-hmm. You know, of events, that current events at that point mm-hmm. in time. So we were writing things, you know, that I think sort of distracted us and sort of just took us out of that and let us continue moving forward and stuff. And also with Shane, you know, he was our singer, he was our new singer at the time. So he was, you know, involved in this new project and everything was like really fresh. And, you know, there was this really optimistic vibe. And I think maybe the main difference with this record is that we went into it and, you know, sort of the socio-political climate of everything right now is just kind of put like a weird dark haze on everything, at least, you know, for us. Mm-hmm. And as we were starting to write the record, you know, that combined with just the fact that we, you know, come from metal bands and we wanted to sort of incorporate a little of what we left out of the first record. Mm-hmm. I think it was just sort of like the perfect storm that ended up making this sort of, you know, oddly dark record for us. But, you know, we're just kind of taking it where it went, you know, letting it write itself. And that's what came out. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's just a blend of a few different things, you know, the false, or maybe not false. It wasn't like it was not authentic, but just that, you know, that forced optimism that, you know, allowed us to get through, you know, trying time, I think didn't have to be there anymore. And we kind of just let what, you know, we were personally feeling at the time dictate the lyrics and, you know, the direction of the music instead of trying to create a vibe. Mm-hmm.
So when you were writing the first album, did you guys try to basically, obviously, you know, you're all the same members except for Shane, as for As I Lay Dying. Did you say, we're starting this other band that we don't want it to sound like As I Lay Dying?
Yeah, and that was another reason that maybe the first record was a little different, I think, is unconsciously we wanted to really separate ourselves, like, from what was going on at the time. And I think musically even we wanted to do that. And even though, you know, to me, I listen to back to the record and I hear riffs and I'm like, that easily could have been an As I Lay Dying song.
Yeah.
Like it altogether, you know, was a more melodic approach, I guess. And that's what we wanted to define this band is, you know, just using melody and not just screaming over a part because the lead singer doesn't sing, you know? So we had Shane and he had this amazing voice. So we're like, we should just use this. And, you know, there's a couple of like scattered screaming spots on there, but it was something that, you know, we didn't really care or we didn't really, it's not that we didn't care to explore. It's just, we didn't know if Shane could, and we didn't think that it needed it. But, you know, with the desire sort of to bring back some of the heavier elements on this record. And then Shane also just discovering more about his voice. We realized on tour the past couple of years that he does have this insanely really good scream, you know? Mm-hmm. So having that in the arsenal was really cool for writing parts. Cause you know, a lot of the first record, we were just writing based on what we knew Shane's strengths were. Mm-hmm. We didn't really know that his strengths were screaming then. So I think, you know, it's just, you know, with this record, we weren't as concerned with just distinguishing ourselves from our old bands just for the mm-hmm. sake of it. We wanted to just write whatever we felt like writing.
Well, actually, you know, to go back to your first point, I was going to point this out when, cause I'm a huge As I Lay Dying fan and actually love the first Woven War album. When I hear that, I point out these two Death to Right. Sorry, I'm saying that messed up.
Can't read your own handwriting.
Yeah, exactly. Dead. and Tempest, you know, they sound, it's like you can immediately, you know, Tempest, obviously you pick it up, you're like, boom, As I Lay Dying. And then the floor drops out and you hear the verse and you're like, all right, this is something different. But it's still, like you said, you know, you could easily, you hear Death to Rights and you're like, this could totally be an Azalea Dying song.
Yeah. You hear the riff style and you know that it's the same players, and like, especially Tempest, you know, that song to me is like, it sounds like I can think of a lot of riffs that it sounds similar to with Azalea Dying. But then, you know, we brought in the more like chilled out vibey verse, and that's something that, you know, we definitely still explore on the new album, but it's just, I think, you know, we use those kind of parts in, you know, to juxtapose the heavier stuff that we did, because the first record, we were just sort of flailing and just writing immediately without any regard for what we were even doing. You know, it just was a really like natural thing that just happened really quickly. And, you know, all of a sudden we have a record deal and all of a sudden the record's out, you know, it was really quick, like within, you know, 6 months, it was everything. The album was finished, you know? So, I think this time we had a little more time to develop the, what we even, you know, what Woven War is and what Woven War is capable of.
Yeah. It's actually funny too. When you listen to the album, it's like you go 8 songs in, you're like, oh wait, here's the first scream, you know?
Right.
And
right.
It's only
yeah.
in like one part. It's in, I forget the song, but it's almost to just like break up the parts.
Yeah, definitely. It's just like to emphasize parts. And that was a lot of, you know, a big reason for that was just that we didn't really know that Shane could scream, and he didn't know he could scream. It just happened because from us going on tour and beating up our voices, we both sort of developed that slight ability to scream, and except Shane just kept moving forward with it. And, you know, all of a sudden has this scream that's like worthy of sort of being the front man scream type voice. So that just, it's something we didn't know was going to happen until it happened. And we were all really excited that, you know, what new possibilities we had for the new record with it. Mm-hmm.
So the new record's got more screams on it. Do you have, you know, like verses and, well, you know, I didn't really listen to the first song too much, but do you have like more parts dedicated to screaming in this one now that he's, you know, found that?
Oh, absolutely. I would say there's probably, you know, I would say maybe a third of the record is screaming, probably, like of each song. You know, there's of course certain songs where there's only a scream or two, sort mm-hmm. of just to, or maybe certain songs that have no screaming, but then there's a couple songs that are everything you hear of Shane in the song is screaming. So, I mean, it's mm-hmm. kind of, you know, we just let it depend on what the song needed, but we also wrote some songs that absolutely, you know, beg to have that scream in there. So, mm-hmm. you know, we did, I wouldn't say that it's not like the same balance of screaming to singing as a band like O Sleep or Azalea Dying is, mm-hmm. but it's has quite a lot more screaming than the first record.
Mm-hmm. Now I noticed also too, that you actually have a lot less, you know, cause in Azalea Dying, you were the primary, you know, melodic vocalist, and in the first Woven War album, you had a lot less of a, you know, a prominence. It was mostly Shane. Do you have more parts in this album, or is it still like the backing vocals and, you know, like underlying vocal parts that you have?
Yeah, there's actually, you know, we took the chance over the past couple of years. I think we realized, all right, so on a song like maybe from the last record, like All Rise or something, you know, Shane was singing in like that top 90% of his range, you know, mm-hmm. he was like living at the very top of his range, and that kind of stuff is really hard to just pull off live unless you're standing completely still, if it, you know, for anyone. So I think on the new record, you know, we definitely wrote parts, you know, like if we wanted a really, you know, layered chorus sound, it would be me on lead vocals with Shane backing, and then he would do all the verse, or, you know, it really depends on the song, but I would say that I sang quite a lot more on this record than the last one. Just, you know, we sort of have established Shane as the front guy. So we kind of, I step in whenever, cause I have a very limited scope of what my voice can do. It's usually mm-hmm. what we call, you know, like the 127, all the MIDI freaks out there will know what that means. It's kind of like the top velocity that you can pick when you're programming MIDI. And so my voice pretty much only works in like balls out mode. I don't really have an exciting voice in the lower range. So pretty much anything melody wise that falls into that is always going to be Shane, cause that's where he shines, with that like rich rock voice, you know, and for singing wise. And if it needs to be the more, you know, like shrieking top end, that's me.
I hear you. Hey, Dan, didn't you see Woven War live?
No. I've actually tried to have, you know, tried to go to a couple. They just weren't in. Yeah, I just weren't able to go. But they're actually playing a common, you know, place that we play at, Stanhope House in New Jersey.
And that's on October 15th, and they're with Soilwork, Unearth, Battlecross, and Darkness Divided is also on the tour.
Yep. Yeah, it's all friends. You know, we know pretty much every band pretty well, other than Darkness Divided. And I'm sure after a couple of days and, you know, we have a couple of beers, it'll be the same with those guys.
Absolutely. And the funniest part is this, like, gigantic tour that could be playing in maybe, like, I don't know, maybe 600 to 800 person venues, even more, is playing Stanhope House, which is a bar with a 2-foot stage.
Yeah, I don't. To be honest, I don't know how you're going to fit a double bass kit on that.
I really don't know either. It's going to be really
it's gonna be a lot of work for them.
Well, you know, I'll say this. You know, we've, you know, with Woven War toured with a bunch of bands that have a lot of backline, and especially Black Label Society. I mean, you've seen those stages, and you know, we've made stages work that you could not imagine, like, you know, your first garage band playing on. So I know that, you know, we're sharing a lot of gear. I think that the last three band, actually last four bands might all be sharing a kit. I'm not exactly sure on that, but we're, you know, it's because everybody knows everyone so well. Even on shows like that, you know, usually the crew and bands work together to make it work so that no one's, like, extremely screwed on space. I've never really seen even the most, you know, professional headliner type bands with huge crews. They're usually there to help. So I assume it's going to still, it'll work. It'll probably be a great show with the crowd that close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now what, does like the people that help you out, do they ever like limit the kit to fit in, you know, specific spaces, like maybe the less cymbals or stuff like that?
No, I mean, we've never experienced that. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine a band doing that, because it kind of, you know, cripples a drummer, I would say. You know, for us, with every tour we've done, we sort of even like scale down our rigs, just not only for, you know, just convenience sake, but also just for load in, you know, going upstairs with gear. You know, nowadays with the capability of the, you know, Axe FX and Kempers and stuff like that, you know, bands can show up with 100 pounds of guitar gear instead of 500 pounds and three different racks and all this stuff. You know, we just kind of show up with one rack and we're ready to enroll in about 5 minutes. So
it's safe to say there isn't going to be any pyrotechnics at the show.
I mean, unless Nick's rig catches on fire, but yeah, I'm just kidding. That's never happened. I actually have had a rig catch on fire in Europe before, a bass amp. So I definitely won't make fun of that, because it's happened to me and I didn't have a backup on stage. So it was definitely like a 5-minute interlude in the middle of our set. So
what did they do? Come out with fire extinguishers and like stop playing and just like start shooting your amp?
Well, no, what it was is that it immediately, the fire went out, like burned out on its own, but my backup was not in anywhere near, because it was like the first show of a tour, and I just, you know, have done so many tours in my life that that's never been an issue, that there wasn't even a backup, because it was like, you know, in Europe you kind of run in bare bones anyway. So I definitely now always roll with some sort of backup.
Yeah, that's. I can only imagine just like starting off a tour, that happens. Did anything else crazy happen on that said tour or no?
Well, the tour that I'm speaking of right now, I can't remember, honestly, because this is around 2008 or 9 when that happened.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. This is back in the day in the UK in some dark, like, basement venue we played, is all I remember. But definitely came out without, you know, catching the place on fire. So that's usually the goal.
Yeah, it sucks after the whole Great White thing up in Rhode Island, I think it was.
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, honestly, I think less pyrotechnics in small venues is better for all of us, even if it's the safest setup possible. It's just, you never know, man.
Or even no pyrotechnics. I mean, I just saw Bring Me the Horizon not too long ago, and they had, like, little, like, it seemed like smoke cannons that just went and literally it caught the back of a security guard, and I believe he got a little bit burnt from that.
Yeah, because those are actually, they're CO2, so they might, I don't know if they come out cold or what, but I've seen bands with those, and I think we've had them a couple times in Europe, like on some of the festival shows. We've played with pyro before, but it's definitely always in an outdoor, well-ventilated and well, like, you know, certified
well-controlled
place to do
them.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, believe it or not, I saw your band As I Lie Dying once, and that was with Slipknot and Asking Alexandra. And the only thing I remember about that show, well, other than you guys having a great performance, was one guy who had a huge back tattoo dedicated to As I Lie Dying. And it, I don't know why, it just stuck with me for the rest of my life.
Because it's crazy dedication right there.
Yeah, it was like, you know, you have a chest piece, but like on the back. And so it was like the whole top half of his back was dedicated to you guys. So have you ever seen like a crazy-ass tattoo like that of something that, you know, of As I Lie Dying? Or Woven War, or with your lyrics, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we see quite a few fans that have, you know, maybe gotten their ticket signed or something, and then they go get that tattooed, or even we signed their arm and they have that tattooed, which is crazy. But you know, even, you know, with Woven War, like the symbol ended up being something that's like easily tattooable, and you know, it definitely like lends itself easily to being tattooed. So we've seen a few people with that, which is rad. You know, it's something that, you know, you never really think about when you're like creating a logo or something, but you know, seeing that and just seeing people's dedication is definitely something that I've thought about when I'm like, you know, when you're writing and you're just like, man, does anyone care? And then you think of those people and you're like, that person cares probably a little too much, but that's awesome. I mean, I have a music related tattoo, so I understand that. The need or want to do something like that.
Yeah, I have one of my favorite bands is tattooed on my leg, so I can relate.
Yeah, I mean that's me too. I have a white pony on my leg.
Oh, that's fucking awesome! I love Deftones.
Yeah, they're one of my favorites.
Now, I'm guessing you enjoyed that album, but like to hear like Chino's like flat out said that he thought that most of the album was a mistake. Like, how does that make you feel a little bit?
It's weird. I understand that mentality though, because there's, you know, there's certain songs or certain, you know, moments that you listen back to and you're like, that didn't turn out at all like I wanted it to. Mm-hmm. And you then hear from some fan that's like the song that got them through some tough period or whatever. And you're, you know, it gives it a new light. So I can understand how maybe they don't even really fully grasp how much something they created affected someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially you, if you ended up getting the tattoo of the white pony on your leg, man.
Exactly. And I know like two other people I've met with the same tattoo in the same spot, so mm-hmm. I'm not alone.
That's crazy. I've never understood the argument that people have, you know, when you tell them, like, oh, I'm thinking about getting a tattoo, and, you know, I want to get my favorite band, and they're like, well, what if they break up? And I'm like, listen, you know, if the, you know, for instance, you know, As I Lay Dying, if I got a tattoo of you guys and you broke up, that does not mean I'm going to stop listening to your previous catalog of music and just totally disband and get my tattoo covered up. It's a symbol for something that was there at that point in my life. So even if you did break up, it's still, like I said, a part of your life, and you can still relate to it even though it's, you know, done, at least for now.
Yeah, anyway. So I mean, it's like throwing a, you know, some trinket from, you know, a vacation on your dresser or something mm-hmm. that you look at and reminds you of it. You know, it just happens to be that it's, you know, scarred into your skin for eternity.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. But actually, going back to your logo, and I'm looking at it now, whose idea was it with the not fully circle, like the broken link?
You know, I think that we kind of were reading, we worked with the same artist as we worked with for the first record, who he's the one who actually designed that logo for us. We always give him the lyrics and sort of some of the subject matter and what it means to us first, and he sort of comes up, like, you know, with the first record, he saw it as like sort of a this record, I think, you know, it could mean several things, you know, the chain with a link out of it. And I think, you know, we didn't necessarily ask for that. It was just sort of an idea he came up with. It was actually the second artwork we got for the record. The first artwork, you know, for the cover that we got was actually this funeral wreath that was really cool. We just ended up not really liking the color scheme as much. sort of like the honor is dead. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like, okay, dead funeral. And it looked awesome. Like the photo was amazing, but we just like, to be honest, we wanted something a little darker. And so we might end up still using that art for something. It's really cool. But as far as like a record cover, we kind of, you know, asked for something darker and he came up with a broken chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is pretty awesome.
It's funny. When I look at that, I kind of get like I kind of get like an image of a spider for some reason. Like it's, you know, kind of upside down and like dead, you know, when they crumple up and their legs are standing
yeah,
up.
Oh,
you know?
Shit. Yeah, I see that too.
Yeah, I think for us, we mentioned like how it'd be cool to have interlocking W's or something just because there's two of them in there. Mm-hmm. And then that was literally the first thing he sent after 45 minutes was like, what do you guys think about this? I just mocked it up. And we're like, that's it. Like, work no more. That's what we want.
Well, that was easy. 45 minutes. Boom. You got your logo.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yep.
So what did you do as far as the record label? So after As I Lay Dying, because it's the same, you guys are on the same label as the As I Lay Dying, or is it a different one?
No, it's the same label, Metal Blade Records. They, you know, we met with them shortly after everything went down, and we kind of knew it was the end of As I Lay Dying. And they just let us know, they're like, you know, no pressure, but just know that we're behind you guys should you decide to continue writing. And for us, you know, that was a big encouragement, just knowing that, you know, they were going to support us moving forward. And we always, you know, we started writing before we necessarily had a record deal. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think we actually signed the record deal till the record was completely finished, like, and, you know, already mixed and mastered. We just sort of like self-funded it and then signed a deal afterwards. But yeah, it was definitely helpful just to know that they were still in it with us and that they, you know, after, you know, I think at that point the band had been signed to Metal Blade for almost a decade, if not more. Mm-hmm. So it's a long friendship and, you know, business relationship that, you know, we really respect Metal Blade and they've always been great to us. So we really had no conversation of going to any other label. We just knew it was going to be Metal Blade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They seem definitely like a great, you know, label. I, you know, listening to the owner, I think it's Brian, you know, just say right. that they don't let anything, you know, pass them by. If someone there says, you know, listen, this is a really good band, you know, they said that they listen to it. You know, if they think that it's something good and that's it's good material to go forward with, that they will. He just seems like a very, you know, straightforward, like really good guy. It doesn't seem like it's about money at all, you know.
At the very base of it, you know, they're just in it for the music. They're not there to you know, put a band. They're not there for the money. They're not there to put a band on the cover of Rolling Stone. They want to take interesting, great bands and develop them. And I think that they do that really well. Mm-hmm.
They started out, I was researching it. He started out just kind of putting like compilations of music, you know, putting Metallica together. And now it's a full-fledged popular metal label.
And the funny part is, on like one of the first releases that he put out, like a little compilation CD, he spelt Metallica wrong. He spelt it with two T's. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they like made up that name once they knew they were going to be in a compilation, because he was kind of just like, hey guys, why don't you come onto my compilation, you know, like that I'm putting together. Don't quote me on that, but if I know the story correctly, I believe that, you know, there was a lot of, you know, just Brian sort of prodding them to get their song onto his compilation. So he was kind of, you know, he definitely, there's a lot of bands you hear of, you know, that Brian and the others at Metal Blade hear before they're, you know, necessarily some gigantic band, huge. But they hear how great a band is and sort of believe in them before anyone else.
That's a good thing to have in a record label, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's better than some labels that give you maybe, let's go with a 10-year deal worth at like $100,000, which I actually heard from a band, which I'm not going to say. And then they go to another label and they're like, all right, we'll give you one release at $100,000. And like you could tell that, you know, they just want you locked in for life. And you have other ones that are just there for the music and just want to see you progress. And I get that from Metal Blade. Like, you know, it just... They, like Dan said, they're all about the music, not about making a quick buck, because if they want to make a quick buck, they're definitely in the wrong business, in the metal business.
Exactly. You know, there's I think for them, you know, that it's a gamble, you know, because it's expensive to make records. It's expensive to distribute records, but that's why they, you know, they believe, you know, they have to believe so much in the artists they put out, because, you know, it is also a business. And so you can tell, you know, when they do go into business with a band, that they are, you know, definitely believe in them, and they're, you know, they're down for the cause, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing, the one reason why I listen to metal, because, you know, it's mostly about the love for music. You know, like rap music, do you really, I mean, most of them, yeah, maybe some of them do it because they love it, but a lot of it's just, you know, when people listen to it, it's to feel cool and, you know, like blast your subs. With metal, I feel like it's a little bit more, it's more about the love for the music than, you know, trying to make money or a quick buck, like John said.
Yeah, I think, you know, for metal bands, you'd be kind of silly to get into it to make money, and I think most people get into it just because they love playing music, they love riffing out on guitar, bass, drums, whatever, and just playing music for people. And if you end up, you know, finding that niche where you can make a living from it, like, you know, we have in the past, you know, it's great, you know. And then, you know, it's also great just to have that release, even if you're making $0 from it, you know. It's just something that, you know, you might not want it to be the case, but if you're like me, it's just something that, no matter how financially unstable it could get, you know, I think I'll always play music, you know, no matter how, on what kind of a stage it is.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, a lot of people got into music because they just, you know, they wanted to get up on stage and, you know, thrash and go crazy and have a good time. And they didn't think that they were going to get famous. And it just happened, you know, after getting shows and shows that, boom, you know, they got big. That's a lot in metal. You know, they just want to freaking play music and have fun. And then it turns into something like a career.
Yeah, it turns into a business overnight, more or less.
Yep, pretty much.
So I'm actually looking at the active roster for Metal Blade, and holy shit, that's a ton of bands and acts. I know you're playing on tour with some of the bands from Metal Blade, and I'm shocked it's not like a Metal Blade Records tour type of deal, like having their name on there. And it's called, the Fury Tour, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, and if you could pick any act on Metal Blade to tour with or to open for or have open for you, whatever you want, who would it be?
Man, you know, we've toured with quite a few of them. Some of the bands, you know, that come to mind that I would love to tour with again, or, you know, maybe haven't toured with and would want to. Like, mm-hmm. I definitely love Amon Amarth, those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we toured with them in Europe once, and that tour was amazing. Great guys, like, really fun to hang out with. Between the Baird and me, I mean, we've toured with them as well in the States before, or our old band did, but it, you know, those guys have always inspired me ever since I first heard them in 2002. They've been progressing and just, I don't know, just incredible band. I'm trying to think. I mean, there's so many that come to mind, it's hard for me to even choose. To be honest, but, you know, I really like some of the stuff that, you know, Cattle Decapitation has put out, and Allegion. Like, there's quite a few, you know, there's, I mean, to be honest, there's so many good bands. You could pick, you know, just close your eyes and point at one, and it would probably be rad.
Is Unearth still with Metal Blade?
They are not. I don't think they have been for maybe
for a
like
while.
Five years or so, something like that.
Jeez.
Yeah, you want to know, so first, I don't think I noticed that Azalea Dying was on Metal Blade until I, you know, Unearth. For some reason, when I started getting into Unearth, that was like, oh, that's why, because Buzz used to wear the shirts with the, you know, the cut-off Metal Blade shirts. So I'm like, oh,
right,
you know,
right.
Nice. You know, I always associate them with Metal Blade Records because of that moment when I started getting into them. But that's another band, too, you know, that I listen to. Like, as far as my primary, you know, influences, it's Unearth and Azalea Dying. And it's just,
that's
those
awesome.
Are both from Metal Blade, you know?
Yeah.
And now Adam D from Killswitch is on Metal Blade with his side project. So it's
Corpse
it's
Grinder
like,
and Santa Lucas, yeah.
And it's like all my influences like thrown into one label. It's crazy.
Yeah, man. I mean, they definitely, when it comes to metal, there's really not a better label to be on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I'd have to agree with that.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyways, since you are in a metal band and I'm and you do listen to metal, do you listen to anything other than metal? Like, maybe do you listen to rap or pop or anything that you maybe won't like to admit?
Oh, yeah, and I'm not afraid to admit that. I'm not one of those guys who, like, doesn't – I don't get embarrassed by that because it's just, you know, it's what I like, so why would I be embarrassed? But I don't know. I'm trying to think. I mean, I really love – outside of the metal, I like bands like I like Jimmy Eat World a lot. I think they, you know,
great band.
Have done so much for, you know, soundscapes. When you listen to their records, they're one of the first bands that really inspired me with, you know, doing like these lush kind of soundscapes and songs. I really, you know, outside of metal, even I really like some of the production on stuff like Lana Del Rey, like her. I think her overall vibe is just so cool and it's relaxing, something I would listen to when I'm going to bed or something. You know, obviously into a lot of, you know, just, I really like, I guess, well, that would be considered metal. trying to think, I really like Kendrick Lamar. If I'm gonna listen to hip hop, that, and, trying to think, this is one of those questions, you know, you always know the answer to until someone asks
of
you,
course,
and then
yes.
You're trying to like,
or until after the interview.
Yeah. Exactly. But you know, there's, yeah, you know, when it comes to things that I, outside of the genre that maybe some extreme metalhead might frown upon, those are some of them. Those are some of the ones that stick out. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm really that big of a country fan at all. Shane is a huge country fan. He likes some stuff that I actually would be embarrassed if I did like, but I don't. So I won't mention those. But
But the problem, yeah, is a lot of country, like a lot of the mainstream country, is basically the same thing. Well, I took my baby to the bar last night, jumped in the tractor and a rover home, and then my dog came and, yeah, humped my leg. It's like, what the fuck? It's every fucking song.
Dude, well, yeah, and any country that I do love is stuff that I was exposed to when I was really young, mm-hmm, and it's also before that kind of line between pop and country sort of blurred, and it's just the same thing, you know? So I definitely can understand why somebody could get into country, because the musicianship is just unbelievable still, even on the really crappy stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's really just the subject matter and monotony of it that I don't get into. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's basically the infamous joke, what happens when you play a country song backwards?
What is that?
You get your dog back, you get your truck back.
Yeah, you know, it is funny because it's literally like he's, you know, I barely listen to country, but when I hear it on the radio or I hear it like, you know, flipping through channels, it literally is all about that. It's like it's basically like a party genre. It's all about drinking and having a good time, and
which is good. Yeah,
no, it's awesome.
Definitely,
but
do that.
Yeah, but I also feel like when you write music, it should be something more about, you know, like the lyrics should be more substantial than just I'm going to go out and have a beer and have a good time and, you know.
Well, there's a need for that, I think,
yeah,
too. And I would listen to like Andrew WK if I was in that mood, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you know, Def Leppard or I don't know, something, you know, badass, and I don't know. You just you know, different strokes for different folks. I mean,
yeah,
if you had this same question for Shane, he probably would have
beat the shit,
you know,
out of me.
Listed some of those
what are you
country
talking
bands
about?
That
I
we're
love
talking
that.
About. Yeah. But that's, you know, that's the beauty of it, I guess. Everybody can have their own opinion.
Yeah, and it's like misconceptions with metal. You know, I don't listen to metal because I want to kill people. I listen to metal because it gets me amped up and excited to do things, you know. If I didn't, I'd be like, oh, I don't want to do this, you know. At least when I listen to that, it gets me amped up, gets me pumped. It doesn't get me, you know, excited to go out and shoot up people, you know, which is like a misconception for
it
people
is, yeah,
that don't, you know, when they hear screaming. Yeah. It's like, oh, and they killed their mother? No, it's actually, you know, there's a lot of substantial lyrics behind those screams.
Yeah, for me, you know, there's, with metal at least, I think it's a weird double standard because, you know, there's tons of people who probably hate metal because of, you know, the themes or the whatever they perceive the themes could be about. But then they love to watch, like, violent horror movies or something.
Yeah.
Like, there's plenty of people, and it's like, you know, what it's still entertainment, you know what I mean? Like, maybe some of the bands are serious about it, but maybe some of the directors of a horror movie are serious about it. You know, you don't really know. It's just, it's like a different, you know, just a different texture for your palate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
And then you have people like Rob Zombie who blend the lines with both.
Exactly. And that's the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he has a new movie coming out, right, Dan?
Yeah. It looks, when I saw the preview, it looks kind of like Devil's Rejects. It almost like it was like a splitting image. I don't know if when it comes out. I think it comes out soon. I'm not a huge fan.
I'm guessing around Halloween.
Stuff, but yeah. No, I actually could have sworn it was supposed to be out sooner than that. But I would assume like October, you know, November would definitely be time for his movie to be released.
And to think that he just got off a tour with Korn and now he's like, okay, well, now it's time to promote my movie. Like, this guy seems like he never stops.
No, it doesn't.
Jesus.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that's the dream, to be able to just do what you love, like be creative in either music or film, I guess, for him. You know, he gets to do exactly what he wants to do and be creative whenever he wants, which is pretty much, I think, any artist's ultimate goal.
So if you could do something else other than music, or aside, like with him, he's doing movies with music alongside your music, what would it be?
I mean, I've definitely always been interested in looking into like soundtrack type stuff, you know, like accompanying a movie or something like that with music. And I think that, you know, it's definitely a completely different world and it would take a lot of practice because it's just so different from what I do. But I'd like to think that, you know, I as a musician kind of pay more attention to those things and have kind of a good starting point. But who knows, I might completely suck at it. I don't know.
Now, John, I'm not aware of any other bands that did something like Linkin Park did for Transformers 2. Do you know of any? Because that was the first time I'm like, oh, look, shit, a popular band I listened to is actually going to do a soundtrack for a movie. And they even used, like, parts of, like, one of their songs, New Divide.
Mm-hmm.
They used it as, like, some, you know, the music behind certain scenes.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
that's really cool. I think, you know, like, there's been more of that happened with video games. You know, you hear a lot of guys, like, I know Meshuggah did some music for some video games. And I know, you know, there's a few musicians I've heard about that, like, well-known musicians who have lent their stuff to that. I mean, I do know that some of the like 80s shredders definitely used to do sweet dive bombs and like Lethal Weapon and stuff. That's that's close, you know.
Yeah, you want to know, it's actually, if you've played it, John, I know you don't like this kind of video game, but
if it's not sports, it's not for me.
But Doom, dude, you got to listen to the soundtrack. It, you know, when we were talking about metal and like the misconception, it's exactly what you would think from metal, like Doom. You know, killing demons, and you just hear like metal, like dun 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 dun. Like you hear like sick like metal stuff going behind it, and you just picture, all right, demons, slaying demons, killing people, chopping off heads, and metal. This is perfect, you know. So I was gonna say, as far as video game soundtracks, they have it like spot on for metal. But yeah, if you ever get a chance to play it, it's dude, the music is pretty sick.
I might dabble into it, Dan.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I'm going to flat out buy it right now as soon as we're done with the interview. But
yeah. All right, so I'll get it, and I'll rent it and play it, and you can just sit back and listen to the music.
But that's the problem. I don't have a PS4.
So you can just – I have two.
Oh, I'm supposed to watch you play?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, what the fuck? I'm not like a teenager who goes onto YouTube and watches that shit.
Where there is also two-player.
Yeah, that's also true.
You could also play it with me, John.
I can. Thank you. Thank you for the fucking invite, Dan.
Oh, you're welcome.
Jesus Christ. I don't know, but yeah, anyways, like, all these teenagers watching people play video games. Like, I remember when I was younger, if someone was hogging the video game, I'd want to fucking fight them. Like, I just want to play. And, like, people are making millions on millions of dollars. What the fuck? Was that a domestic dispute? What the hell's going on back there, Josh? Is everything all right?
No, I'm here. I was just listening. Just paying attention. I'm grabbing a piece of pizza, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. We heard some screaming. I was like,
someone's dying.
No, that was on TV. Sorry.
Oh. Okay. I was this close to making a Tim joke, but I I decided not to. Yes. If I want a career in this. But anyways, like I was saying, it's crazy how, you know, we grew up doing something and like playing video games. Like, we all love playing video games. And now kids these days seem to be extremely bored with playing them and watching other people play with them in, like, a silly voice. Like, did you ever think about, like, how ridiculous that could be one day where, you know, instead of people playing a... Actually, it's already existing in the EDM world. I was about to say, instead of people playing an instrument, they could just play something on a computer and be millionaires. But that's basically what's happening with EDM right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not the dream that I had, and it's not the dream that, you know, most of the people I've ever played with have. But at the same time, you know, it's there does come along some people who actually have some kind of genuine, unique talent, even if they are only using that kind of stuff. So it's like somebody like them paves the way for a bunch of, you know, a bunch of hacks that are riding their coattails, you know, because there's plenty of electronic music we can probably all name, like Nine Inch Nails. And I mean, not that I'm a huge fan, but Skrillex even, you know, he is someone who I think you hear like an aggressive music influence in what he did. And, you know, a lot of people have copied him and stuff, but they, you know, I don't think you can deny that that guy, you know, had something original, at least at one point.
Well, that's the crazy part about Sonny Moore. So he started off with From First to Last, ended up, I think, blowing out his voice and got, like, vocal nodes or something like that. Doctor told him, all right, you know what, lay low off the singing and the screaming. So he basically stopped doing that. Then he put out an electronic album that completely bombed. Like, I don't remember the name of it. All I remember was he was on, like, the AP tour that year. And then he, I guess, I think he went over to England or something like that, was introduced to dubstep. And he was like, you know what? Maybe I should try and bring this over to the U.S. And then he wins a fucking Grammy. He's like one of the top EDM stars in the world.
Exactly, yeah. He like took something that was sort of on the underbelly, but made it something that you like unique that everyone could like that wasn't too far. That was still palatable for like the average music listener, I guess. But there's also, you know, most of the stuff I hear on the radio that I know wasn't played by humans, you know, that's still, you know, it takes, I guess, some skill to write a song that people care about, but it's, you know, it's definitely not something that, you know, I've ever been super interested in, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, the production standpoint, from a production standpoint, the songs are great. Like, having all these things happening at once and in, like, a synchronized, you know, melody, it's great. Seeing it live is a little stranger. I actually went out to Vegas last year at this time, around this time, and ended up going to a pool party where Zedd was DJing. And Zedd is, you know, one of the top names in EDM. And there was maybe like 100 to 200 people there. And I'm sitting there expecting to just see, you know, some Swedish guy pumping his fist up in the air the entire time, like jumping around like an idiot. But it was kind of like a mainstream version of GWAR, meaning you had shit like thrown at you. You had like toilet paper, you had fucking streamers, you had like water grenades. Like it was pretty fucking cool. So, I mean, honestly, they don't, you know, they can't really reproduce what they do live, but what they do live, they put on a party. And I guess
yeah,
that's what
they have to figure out, you know, something visual to keep you, if they're not, you know, on some gigantic stage with 1,000 LEDs, they have to do something, I guess, to, you know, to make it a show. And that's, you know, that's, I think that's a big thing, is a lot of people just, you know, they're there for a show, and they, you know, for them, it's the experience of the show and not necessarily mm-hmm. seeing musicians playing yeah. something technically impressive, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So do you, is there any focus on your mind or anybody in the band to, you know, we really need to get a better, you know, overall image, or at the show, we really need to do more like theatrics and
or synchronize like yeah. jumping or
yeah. like, you know, for instance, like, oh, we need to get like more YouTube videos, or are you guys basically just 100% down for we just need to focus on touring and writing songs?
Well, I mean, we definitely, I mean, consider our image in terms of just like, well, we in like a photo of the band, we want to look like a cohesive band, but we don't really plan out what we're going to wear. We don't plan out stage moves, obviously, and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But, you know, as far as, you know, when we do have the budget to, we definitely consider production on stage, not necessarily theatrics, but, mm-hmm. you know, just lighting, whether we get a lighting package or if we hire a light guy to, you know our songs and kind of, I think that's, you know, such a big part of a live show is having, you know, at least the more synchronization you can have or a light guy that knows your set, it's like almost as important as a sound guy who knows your set, because they can, you know, like add to those moods that you're playing. But, you know, I guess if you're talking about theatrics, like costumes and stuff, or do we all like, you know, go get spray tans before a tour or anything? not really.
Yo, let's go get blowouts. Spray
well,
tans and blowouts.
Hair, so
no,
I'd have to, you know, get some extensions first.
No, but and I was just thinking in the terms of you know, like Motionless in White, where they're all, you know, painted white. They have like that look, because I think it's the bass player. He wears like this.
It looks like a nun.
Yeah, he looks like a nun, but you see him, you know, when he's on tour outside of that, and he just looks like a normal, you know, person in a metal band. He's got tattoos and, you know, black cut-off shirt and, like, maybe shorts. You don't see, like, that huge, that display that, you know, I know that because it's hot as balls, but it's just funny to see, like, that transition, and then you know that for stage, this is, like, you know, our theme, this is what we're trying to go for on stage to get, like, that certain following or whatever.
Yeah, but that's the same in like every genre of music. Do you honestly think Lady Gaga's a fucking freak out in her own personal life?
You never know, dude.
Do you think she's wearing meat dresses like at home, just chilling on a couch?
Well, for instance, like, you know, I was watching one of Motionless and White's videos yesterday where you see these people that are decked out in, you know, black makeup. And, dude, you know, from high school, there's people out there that dress like that. They're constantly like that. So you think that when you see that on stage, you know, this is what they do every day, and some of the members in the band do, but others, you know,
I think it's hyped up a little bit, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. No, definitely.
I don't think King Diamond wears the makeup everywhere he goes.
Oh, exactly. Like
Poison. That'd be fucking awesome.
Walking around like Poison all day long.
Yeah, I think, you know, it really just depends on the band, you know, and I think how, honestly, there's a lot of bands maybe that wouldn't have gotten that initial, you know, sort of attention or artists, you know, without that look, I guess. I would say, you know, a band like Motionless and White, I think they write some really good music.
Definitely.
And I think that kind of like creepy, like metalcore Rob Zombie, like sort of sound that they pull off, Marilyn Manson kind of thing, definitely with that imagery sort of gives it a different life that maybe, I mean, who knows, maybe they still would have been exactly as big without it, but I definitely know it's something striking, and anything that can, you know, set you apart, I guess, is probably a good thing if you're going for that.
Yeah. I mean, going back to Rob Zombie, I mean, you know, he wouldn't be that way, you know, with the movies probably, if he didn't have that live aspect. And even in the music videos, you know, they had that, you know, certain theatrics.
Yeah. The one cool thing I did hear, I think it was the comedian Jim Norton. He ended up meeting Marilyn Manson before his set, I think at Rock on the Range, whenever Manson played, either this past year or the year before. He actually went into his dressing room, and it was about 50 degrees and pitch black. And, you know, you think of, like, stereotypes like, okay, yeah, he's fucking weird. No, Marilyn Manson apparently goes balls out with his performances, gets in, like, the right mindset and shit like that, just to be dark and weird, I guess. But it's just crazy, like, to the extreme of how musicians, like, how they would go. And, I mean, if it works, God bless them. You know, they're doing what they love, and, you know, they're putting on a show, but...
Shit, in high school, before band competitions, we had to, like, stay silent on the bus when we were, like, 10 minutes away. And literally have, like, a mental, you know, because, you know, when you're talking and stuff, you're not really paying attention in that 10 minutes.
Neither is the
like,
crowd, Dan.
Actually, for us, it was pretty sick. But it was basically to stay quiet, because you would get more focused on your playing if you weren't talking about random shit with your friends in high school, you know? So even in band, they have that in high school, which... I don't know.
So is there anything with Woven War? Do you guys are in a dark dress room with 50-degree heat in there? Or
sweat logic beforehand?
I mean, it's pretty much the same thing. It's just everybody has a couple beers and just, like, listens to music. Me and Shane warm up, like, sing some songs that we can harmonize with just to get our pipes sort of warmed up. And that's pretty much it. I mean, we don't have any sort of, you know, I would say definitely nowadays, too, there's a lot less preparation. We used to take things very seriously with the warm-up with our old band, and which was great, and which I think, you know, got us, you know, in shape as musicians and stuff. But I think, you know, the music we're playing now, while maybe not quite as technically demanding, you know, actually requires a little more of a relaxed approach, you know, like when you spend so much time warming up that you've already played the whole set before you get on stage, it sort of takes that, like, release out of it, you know.
Yeah,
at
definitely.
Least for me, I kind of like two beers and 10 minutes of vocal warm-ups, and I don't touch my bass until the intro's rolling usually.
Wow, that's pretty cool. But anyways, I know you're a busy guy. I think this will be a great time to wrap up the interview. So you guys have Censorship, new single is out now. You're also releasing your second studio album. Hopefully there's not a sophomore slump there, called Honor is Dead, October 21st, actually a month from today. And this episode will be out hopefully within the end of the week. You guys are on tour coming up in October as well. Who's on it again? Battlecross, Unearth, Soilwork. Yeah, you name it, this is going to be the best metal tour out there. So if it comes around your area, definitely go out and see it.
We'll definitely be at Stanhope.
October 15th, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, man.
So it's going to be a party.
Sweet. Well, I'll come say what's up to me. Let's hang out before the set or something.
Yeah, we'll do. You have any plugs before we take this off?
I guess, yeah, anyone listening to this that has supported the band, and for you guys too as well, thanks so much. And, you know, we look forward to seeing you guys out there on the road.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
All right. Thank you so much. And right before we go, we usually play a song from the band that we're interviewing. Do you have any songs in mind that you would like us to play? Should we do Censorship or...
Yeah, why not? Let's play the new one, because, you know, the more people hear that, the better that we'll actually know it at the show. So
there we go. Right on. Learn this shit, people.
Yep.
Josh, thank you so much, man.
I'll be watching.
All right.
All right, great. Thanks, man.
All right, thanks. All right, bye.